irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Aveson, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 hello. It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. And I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight with the wonderfully charming Russ Aveson.
Aveson. They better fix that next week.
Yeah, well, the week after. No, 4 weeks.
Oh, four. Yeah, right.
They have 4 weeks to
fix it. Okay, that's good.
So how was your week? Because I got stories about mine.
Go. Because mine was pretty boring, other than the, we just have to say, 109 degrees in Fillmore on Monday, 111 downtown. It was insane.
It was crazy. It was 107 in Simi.
Yeah?
Yeah. I got up and it was like 8:30. I was looking at the at my cell phone because it has
really, it's already in the 90s, I'll bet?
Yeah, 95.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just crazy. And then all of a sudden, wham, yesterday and the day after or day before was like cooled down to like 85.
I would much rather deal with snow.
Oh, you and me both, brother. Well, let's see. Last week, after we left here, did our little family show, I was having some issues, and I made an appointment.
You have a lot of issues.
I understand. And I made an appointment to go in the next day and have a cardiac catheter done.
Well, that sounds fun.
Well, it turns out that the 70% occlusion that he had told me on Wednesday was actually a 99% occlusion.
Because you don't do anything half-assed.
Well,
you just
go all the way, and I get this thing done, and I'm dancing on the table because my left hip, of course, has to be replaced, and I'm just sitting there, and the pain is just like hitting me in waves, and I'm just going insane. And finally, I asked the doctor, I said, how much longer have you got to go with this? And this is killing me. And he says, about 10 minutes. And I said, come on, man.
Yeah.
Give me something.
Uh-huh.
So about 5 minutes later, he talks to the nurse. He says, give him some morphine. So I'm watching her now. I'm thinking, oh, morphine, you know. Yeah. So I see her go over to the cabinet. She gets a syringe. She comes back over. And my IV was right in the crook of my elbow with a little thingy on it. She shoves the morphine in there and injects me full of morphine.
Uh-huh.
Well, can I just tell you?
One of the nicer experiences of your life?
I was going, yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jim. Let's dance. And then the warm fuzzies came creeping up from my crotch and just kind of like took over, and I was in such a happy place.
Do you want to elaborate on that comment you just made? Because I think a lot of people are going,
no.
Oh, okay.
No. Because anybody who's had morphine knows where the happy place comes from.
Okay.
And it just gives you a nice happy place. And then the pain was like immediately gone.
Wow.
And it stayed gone for about 4 hours. So I was a pretty happy guy.
That was good. All right. So now, let's see. Today's Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You had this done when?
A week ago tomorrow.
So 6 days ago.
6 days ago.
And you're here.
I am here.
And you feel awesome.
I feel really good today.
Yeah.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, partially yesterday, not so much.
Now, eventually, will your looks catch up with the way you feel?
Oh, I fear not. And while I've got, while we're talking about this, what's the name of the show? The Writer's Block is brought to you by the good, kind, gentle, handsome people at Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in New Hall. And incidentally, they have their concert series tonight featuring Tom Hyatt, who I guess is just a super deluxe, delicious writer, singer, songwriter, really great guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Bobby Jean is tonight. We'll miss you. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby. And we also have our regular sponsor, which is Sutter's Mill, or not Sutter's Mill, Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh. And, you know, we mention Target Freight every show. And we mentioned that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we ever mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time at rates that you need for your transportation costs. Call today at 844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's kind of cool. And while we're at it, if you're an LTL shipper, which
and I learned that. LTL? Less than a truckload.
Less than truckload. That's very good. Yeah. In fact, you asked me that last time we were together.
Yeah.
You are probably looking for the rates with the least hassle. Well, call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You will not be disappointed or sorry, and we use them all the time, and we are never disappointed. Never.
And neither am I.
And neither are you. But now you know what LTL means.
Yes.
Okay, we are a show about writers, and we do the best we can to bring the writers out of whatever show they might be in tonight. So, that being said, our writer tonight is an award-winning newspaper and magazine editor. He taught journalism and English at college prep levels. The gentleman is author of two novels, A Formula for Murder and A Grand Murder. It seems to me there's kind of like a
yeah, he likes death.
Yeah. Didn't want to say that, but okay. I've got a pattern going here. He writes and edits every single day. He also works as a realtor to keep the wolves from his door. Directly from Sandpoint, Michigan, please welcome David Vizard. David, are you with us? Uh-oh.
Did we lose David?
I hope not. David, are you still with us? Well, let's call him back.
Oh, we lost it?
Yeah, we lost him.
I think we scared him.
We probably did.
Oh, there he goes. Come on, David. Answer. Pick up. Do you think maybe he really got scared? No.
Hello, this is Dave.
Well, we just hate it when people hang up on us. You know that?
You got me. But well, Tell me what happened. Are you having a bypass or what's going on?
No. I had a cardiac cath. I had a what they call an angioplasty.
Yeah.
Oh, they did the angioplasty.
Okay. Yeah, and
that's where I lost. That's where I dropped out.
I have to tell you that the
punchline.
Well, you probably are going to want to listen to the podcast because it was a really great story. And I don't want to waste any time going back through it again. So,
I had a triple bypass 17 years ago.
Whoa!
So I was curious, and I thought, you know, I wanted to know, you know, what you were facing. So,
no, but actually, now I'm nothing. I'm good.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, it's all relative.
Terrific. Well, yeah, it is all relative. And as Russ says, is that going to fix your face? No, probably not.
It won't go quite that far.
No, it doesn't go up. It just, you know, stays right there in the center. But, I feel totally great now. I mean, you know, it's been last Friday was when it was done. And, you know, you kind of feel kind of crappy for a while. And then all of a sudden you start feeling better and better. And you can start breathing better. And pretty soon you're like, you're like normally screwed up instead of really, you know.
Well, good. It sounds like you're back on your game.
Well, I am. Well, I try to be. I'm a guy. Who knows? Yeah. You know, my game being what at this point? I tell you what, though. I had several opportunities to get this taken care of before. And I'm one of those stupid Sicilian people that goes, it'll go away. It's, you know, nothing's going to get me.
A lot of denial out there.
So as we were driving, I was sitting there with a 99% occlusion driving to the studio last week and driving home. And when they finally got the stent put in last Friday, my doctor, of course, being just the gentleman that he is, had to sit there across the table and tell my wife exactly what was going on. Well, he had the Widowmaker. You know, and he could have croaked at any moment. And then she looks at me and she starts smacking me. I say, damn it, you know, don't you ever do that to me again. Okay. I promise I'll never do that again.
All right.
And I hope that's actually the truth.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into your stuff, Mr. Vizard. Is there a Mrs. Vizard?
There is.
Okay, then. Is she listening?
She is actually asleep.
Oh.
Oh yeah, you're
well. That's
you're
right.
Hours,
you're in Michigan.
3 hours, right?
This is yeah. It's after 11 o'clock here.
Uh huh.
Well, your book that we got, which was
A Grand Murder.
I'm going to be real honest in that when I started reading it, and then I had to go in the hospital and everything, and I just couldn't quite finish it. Russ did. He's going to be asking you most of the questions about the book. I really want to know about your process and stuff like that.
Okay.
But one thing I do want to know is you mentioned the Upper Peninsula a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, well, and see, my family that's known as the Upper U.S., but I don't know what you guys call it.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about A Formula for Murder, and then let's get into A Grand Murder, which is your latest book.
Okay.
So, all right,
I'd
one, two, three, go.
A Formula for Murder was my first book, and I wrote that. I had it in mind for a long time while I was managing editor at a daily newspaper in Michigan, the Bay City Times, but I never got to it because I was working on so many journalism projects. But I kept toying with the idea and toying with it, and then I had the opportunity in 2008 after I took a buyout and parachuted out of the crashing newspaper business. And then I finished, my first draft and worked through the book. And, you know, that's one of the things about both stories, A Formula for Murder and A Grand Murder, is that many of the incidents in both of those stories are things that really happened and things that I experienced as a journalist in my 35-year career. So, what I was able to do is weave them into my mystery,
mm-hmm.
and my novel, and you know, give it a what I think is another level of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was the fun part, you know, developing those stories and writing about things that I had experienced and witnessed and dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the characters are people that I have worked with over the years, or come in contact over the years, and some of the characters are combinations of people.
Mm-hmm.
So the first book was a kind of a bucket list thing, as you know, a guy who'd been writing and editing for 30 odd years, and the response to the book was so good. I mean, I didn't expect it. I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was saying, well, when's the next one, you know? And in fact, one of my contractors in town here, who is not a big reader, in fact, he came up and he told me, he's from Kentucky, does drywall. He came up and he said, look, I haven't read a book since high school, but I heard yours is pretty good. I want to read it. And I said, okay. So I sold it to him. And he read it. And he came back and he said, here's $20. And I said, well, what's that for? And he said, it's for the next one. And I said, well, I haven't started the next one. I mean, I haven't even really worked out a storyline for the next one. He said, well, when you get it done, just bring it around the house.
Wow.
Said, all right.
So he's buying rough drafts from you? Is that what you're saying?
What's that?
He's buying rough drafts from you?
No.
Oh.
No. No. He wants when I finish the next book.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So he pre-purchased it.
He was giving me the money in advance.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And so
he was the first pre-order.
Right. In the interim, you know, he said he hadn't read. You know, so I got a lot of satisfaction out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy who hadn't really read much, and you know, he's a drywaller. He's a works blue collar guy. Works all the time, and. So I said, well, while I'm working on that next draft, why don't you try some others?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, what do you think? And I knew he was from Kentucky, so I said, you like, courtroom drama, crime, mystery, that kind of thing? And yeah. So I John Grisham.
Oh, absolutely,
so,
yeah.
You know, from Mississippi, you know, with that Southern reference that, you know, drips through every piece of his work. And And the guy read three of them while he was waiting for me to write the next one. So, so here's a guy who's reading again. And I love that, you know. I mean, so, a lot of the things that I'm involved with up here in the upper thumb of Michigan is we have a writers group, very active writers group in Huron County, where in the last 4 years we've published 11 books among our members.
Wow! So it's kind of like a co-op.
Well, we work together to help each other, you know, get over the hump. That's
sure.
what it's all about. Talking to each other, and anybody can come to the group at any time and bring something. If you've got a piece of dialogue you want to run past the group, or you want to do a scene, you want to work through the storyline a little bit more, or try a different twist, anybody can do that at any time, you know. So it's an open group, open process in that way, and we kick each other in the pants sometimes pretty hard. And then other times it's encouragement, you know. I mean, to help you keep going. Nothing happens until you write something, until you get it on the page or on the computer screen.
Right. Well, that's exactly what my creative writing teacher used to say, too.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I run across people all the time, you know, who say, oh, gosh, I've always wanted to write a novel. And I said, well, write it. Sit down and start writing. I mean, you know, quit talking about it and do it. And
that's really it.
That's you, Russ.
Yep.
He keeps talking about it.
Yeah. The other thing our writers group has done in Huron County is we've started a young writers competition among all the high schools here. Mm-hmm. And it's open to all the high school students. And it's they can submit, you know, 500 words to 1,500 words. You know, essays, stories, journalistic pieces, fiction, you know, romance, true life. Well, you know, we get all these great stories from these kids about their lives and being out there and what they're going through. And especially what's been really interesting recently is they're revealing things about their experiences on the social network, you know. So they're really great stories, and we award prizes. Top prize is $250, $150, $100, and, you know, we raise the money. You know, we just go around and kick on doors and rattle the bankers and the insurance guys and the realtors, which I am a realtor, and we raise the money, the prize money, a couple $1,000s every year, and we sponsor a contest. And we want these kids to write, and we don't care. We want them to read something interesting and write something interesting, and just do that. If you do that every day, you're not going to have any problem becoming an effective communicator, whether you end up being a writer, author, or whether you go into any kind of business in today's world. You got to have effective communication skills. You can have great ideas, but if you can't communicate them, you're dead. So that's what we push, that these are skills that you can learn when you're young, that you can use your whole life.
Absolutely.
And it's not all.
David, may I ask you the name of your group?
It's called HOG, Huron Area Writers Group.
Huron Area
Writers Group.
Writers group.
And HOG. For short, and we're on.
Jim
Facebook.
Should be a member of that group. Be a hog,
except oh yeah, all right. Except I don't live in Huron.
You could be honorary.
I could be an honorary member. I've got 12 books under my belt.
Yeah, you know, David, I just finished reading A Grand Murder.
Yes,
and I was really interested. In listening to you talk about your writers group, where you all kind of help each other, you run dialogue by each other. You say, "Hey, I'm kind of stuck at this roadblock here. I don't know how to get through it." And you kind of all work together to develop things. And the comment I made to Jim tonight before we came on the air, I said, "You know what I really liked about this book was how authentic
the dialogue
and the characters were."
Oh,
I mean, that stood out. That stood out to me. I believed every character, except I will say that the one guy Nick, he's got the girlfriend Tanya.
Yeah,
and then he also has, and I'm not going to give anything away about the story. But then he also has the boss that they call her the publisher that they call her the castrator, and there are a couple times in the book where Nick is faced with, let's say, an opportunity for some amorous activity, and he's able to refrain from doing anything. And I thought, you know what? No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, you may want to work on that, Dave.
Okay. I'm going to have to work on Nick, polish Nick's character up a little bit.
Make him a little darker.
But I will say, honestly, that the characters just really stood out as being real to me. And I guess
well, you know, here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the thing about Nick, if I might just interject.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
You know, he's horribly flawed in terms of, you know, he's got this drinking problem that he tries to generally keep under control, but it, every once in a while it flares up, and you know, he's a workaholic, and sometimes he's, you know, real short with people. But he's noble. He is a noble character, and that's one of the things that I really, and you know, passing up an amorous situation, I think, you know, in certain circumstances could be considered quite noble.
I think it was, and you know, because he had some you know, real tragedy in his life, he was, it, even though, I mean, the tragedy was terrible, I have a feeling that was what led him to be more noble, because it put him more in touch with himself.
Yeah, great.
That's right. That's a good observation.
I'm so tickled to hear that you were able to read that and extract that from the story. I mean, that's all about Nick, and you know, that's Nick and Dave. You know, I really tried to push those characters, and now my editor kind of pushed me to create a young female reporter, and so that's where Greta
right
comes. Uh-huh. Okay, Greta Norris, and she is a creation of two great reporters I had when I was managing editor, Greta Guest and Melinda Norris. Very smart, very sharp, very bright, right on it, good sense of humor, good wit, you know, willing to try some risky things, and so I took the best traits of both and created Greta Norris. But before I did, I knew those former reporters of mine might recognize themselves. So I called Greta on the phone, called them both, and I said, "Look, here's what I'm thinking about doing. Are you okay with that? Because you know you're going to see that." And Greta was like, "Oh, you know, that's great, Dave. Yeah, go for it." And Melinda, she said the same thing, and but she hesitated at the end. And I said, "Are you sure? Is this going to be okay?" And she goes, "Well, I want you to do one thing for me. Will you promise me one thing?" And I said, "Well, sure, Melinda. What can I do for you?" And she goes, "Would you give me big boobs?" For once in my life, I want big boobs. I've never had them.
That's funny, right there. I don't care who you are.
And I said, "Melinda, I'm a writer, not a magician."
Oh, gosh.
Made a new friend, didn't you, Dave?
I'll do what I can. And here's the thing. You got to read the book to find out if I was successful.
Well, you were. But I will say, the wording that you used, you were very nice. You said that, because I remember when Nick first met, or it was Nick. No, it was Zeke. When Zeke first met her, and he was kind of eyeing her up and down, he paused at her ample bosom. I think that's the way you worded it.
Yeah.
And then she made a point of saying, "Hey, my eyes are up here, buddy. Come on,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
You want to have a real conversation? This is where it's going to happen."
You know, Dave, I unfortunately did not get a chance to finish your book, and I'm kicking myself. And I will finish it. However, there was a scene in that book that really grabbed me, and it is as the reporter, I believe that was Nick, was taking the brother of the deceased back out to the hotel or back to the morgue.
Oh yeah,
when to identify him,
right?
And I mean, it was like there was like no conversation in the car. There was like no conversation or limited and no conversation in the morgue until he gets there and they pull the sheet back and there was dead silence. And all he says is, "That's not my brother."
Mm-hmm.
That was so cool, just the way you did that.
Great. I'm glad you like that. I mean, I that's the hook. You know, I mean, that's really, I thought, that, you know, this is a way in 5 pages I can grab the reader.
And you did.
Start the story and grab the reader and set the table, you know, for a story that's going to unfold before the reader. And hopefully they're going to burn through those pages without putting it down. And that's my goal.
Let me ask you, because I read it on a Kindle, so I don't know. How many pages is the book? Do you know?
250? Yeah, about that. 236, 246, something like that, yeah. It's about 85,000 words. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, it is a book that you can sit down and, like you said, burn through the pages. I'll be honest with you, I read the first chapter yesterday, and I read the entire book this afternoon in a few hours. And I was glued to it. It was very, very good. And the way you develop the story, where you know you kind of think you know where it's going, it makes a little turn. And the other interesting part about it was, and again, I don't want to give away any of the story, but there's a character in it that you don't know who it is. You know they exist, but you don't know who this person is. And all through the book, you're aware of like what this person's doing, and it kind of work. How can I explain? It kind of works in the background. You watch what this person's doing these things. You know this person's doing these things, but you don't really know anywhere through the book until toward the end how it's connected to the main story. So it was real nice. Kudos to you. It was very good.
Let me ask you a question, Dave. Okay, go ahead.
And that's the difference between a grand murder and a formula for murder. Mm-hmm. A formula for murder has a more traditional mystery, you know, a whodunit ending, where mm-hmm. you get down to the end and then you find out, you know, here's the real story, here's what's going on. And so I wanted to work that this second story in the series a little differently. And instead of a whodunit, it's more about the motive.
Right.
What was the motive for 3 people are dead.
Right.
What? How did that happen? You know. And here's the thing. If that misidentification had not occurred, if Zeke had been in that hotel room,
right,
there would have been no story.
That's true. That's true. But it was outstanding. And I wanted to ask you, I want to know what kind of writing did you do when you were in the newspaper business? Because I know that you know in the story in the book you've got these reporters, and I'm sure that your intimate knowledge of how the newspaper business works really helped you generate these characters as being real, and the things they did were real. Mm-hmm. But what kind of writing did you do?
Well, as a young journalist, I was covered a whole bunch of different beats, but my primary and my proudest work, I think, was when I was the labor reporter for the Flint Journal, and I covered the General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, and Volkswagen kind of off to the side,
mm-hmm.
And the UAW and their dealings with the Electrical Workers Union and the Teamsters, and so I covered that, and I and in fact there's a secondary theme in the back of that story about the assembly line speed up at the Chevy truck plant.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Okay. That really happened.
Oh, it did?
Okay. you did.
Now, was
and I was the reporter who went in the plant and discovered it.
Oh, and so you were the one that they brought into the office and showed you the little contraption that did
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And I did the diagram. I took pictures. And, you know, when they came to me and told me, they said, you know, I had these, then I was covering the beat, and the union guy said, hey, we caught him. And I said, well, what do you mean you caught him? He said, well, we caught GM speeding up the assembly line. And this is a in the auto industry, this is a myth, a legend that goes throughout the industry and has gone back for years, that management speeds up the line to get more production without paying the workers, okay? But they've never been able to prove that, you know? So this guy says, we can do it. And I said, well, how? And he told me about the secret button and how the managers controlled the assembly line speed, turned it up when they wanted to kick up production, and then when the union came to time the line, they turned the speed back down.
So the union, so let me ask you, were the union contracts then, they specify that, okay, if the worker's on the assembly line, he has to do so many rivets or so many door panels per hour, and that so the speed is regulated. And that's part of the union contract?
Yes, it is. The local plant contract. And here's how they do it. They figure to make X number of parts, it's going to take X number of people.
Right.
Okay. And that's how the contract. So if you're gonna run a line at a speed that produces this amount to build those vehicles, you've got to have X number of people working in that during that shift. Okay.
Okay.
And so that's how that's worked out. So what the superintendents at the Chevy truck plant did was they just crank up the line, and that made everybody work a little faster.
But aren't they getting paid? Aren't they getting paid by the hour to do the work?
But
anyway?
They wouldn't get paid overtime,
right?
Put out the same amount of vehicles.
Right. You know, I got to say, I mean, I have employees that work for me at my ranch, and there's a certain amount of work they have to get done. And you know what? Sometimes I have to put the pressure on a little bit and say, hey, look, you know, you're behind it. You still got to get this stuff done. And right. I've done it enough myself that I know they're fully capable of doing it. So if the plant supervisors, let's say, speed up the line by 2 or 3%, whatever they might do, and the employees can all still get the work done, that's telling me that, you know, GM was getting screwed by the union because they were capable of doing it at that rate.
Sure.
It was costing money, costing the shareholders money.
Sure. Hey, I got to put you guys on hold for just a second. We have to spend some of Joe Robertson's money. So just hang tough. Don't hang up on us, David.
No, I won't.
Okay. We'll be back to you in just a second. Sutter's Mills Restaurant in Simi Valley is one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura County. At Sutter's, you'll find casual dining with a touch of elegance in a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. They're well-trained staffed. Provides their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecue pork ribs, deep fried chicken, or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corking fee. Visit their website at suttersfordining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and their menus. Their menu also offers a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 p.m. till close. Enjoy. And, again, for reservations, call 805-520-4797 or go to www.suttersfordining, the four being the number four, dining.com on the web.
We should stop by there for dinner after the show.
It's a little late to stop by for dinner. Okay. Yeah, but we can go there some weekend. You can, Karen, come out. We'll go do the thingy here. And let's get here we go.
What was that?
That was CSI. Oh. Are you still with us, Dave?
I am.
Did that blow your eardrums out?
Well, I guess I could say I was amused.
Okay, then. If you want to call and talk to our guest tonight, that would be Dave Vizard. The number to call here is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. And if you're just now joining us, Russ and I have been having a fascinating conversation with David from Michigan, and he's the author of two books. One is called The Formula for Murder, and then his newest book is called The Grand Murder, and it seems to be a pattern there, murder. But he seems to be doing it quite well, and actually your stories are quite well-crafted, which is a question I wanted to ask. When you're sitting and crafting your stories, do you outline as you craft your story, or do you do as some writers do? Do you know what the start of the chapter is going to be? You know what the end of the chapter is going to be, and you just kind of fill in the blanks, or do you just play it by ear and just write as you go?
Well, you know, what works for me, and it's different for every writer, and that's what we tell the students when we're talking to them, or I'll talk to people about picking this up, is you have to find out what technique works best for you. Mm. And for me, what I need, I think it's because of my journalism background, is that I need to have an arc. I need to know the story arc. I need to know, in general terms, here's the story I'm going to put together. Mm. I may not know the ending. I may not know the exact middle, or you know, but I need points to shoot for. And so once I've got it kind of mapped out in my mind, and usually that's what it is, I'll just make notes about here's how I want the story to run, or here's what I'm thinking for the story to take off. And then the first few chapters are always so important to pick up the reader and run with the individual.
Sure.
So I really work hard, and I rewrite all the time to get the story up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work best in the morning. Early in the morning, when the birds are chirping and it's just me, the phones aren't ringing, nothing, you know. That's what I like. It's quiet, and I've already got it in my mind. Here's how I want to rough in this chapter. So I start working on it, and I rough it. You know, I'll write it a couple thousand words, and a couple hours, just bang it out. Okay, and then as the day goes on, then I'll go off and start my work day and chore day and do my other stuff. But as the day goes, I'm always thinking about the story. Once you start that process,
yeah, that is absolutely true. That
it's
is absolutely
always turning
true.
In the back of my mind. I can be having a conversation with somebody, and all of a sudden, I'll get a piece of dialogue. I'll get something will click in the back, and it's like, oh, okay, I got to add this to the scene.
Mm-hmm.
This has got to be part of it, you know? And so I'll make some notes. And sometimes, you know, even at night, it never stops. You know, I mean, I'll wake up sometimes at night with an idea or a piece of the story, and I always feel like if I feel like that could be inspiration, you know. So I don't want to turn my back on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say no to it. I'll jot it down, and it may turn out to be crap, but it may be really good. So, but for this story, or later in the story, or for somewhere else in time. You know, if it's good, I'll hold on to it if I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can work it into the story, I'll do that. And then that evening, I'll pick that chapter back up that I had already written and add some of the stuff that I thought about during the day, and then play with it, have some fun with it, you know. And then start thinking, okay, now here's where I am after this chapter. Where am I going to go tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you start thinking ahead, okay? How am I going to drive this story, you know, through the next chapter?
Sure.
And then the next morning, I get up, same thing, jump right in, try to bang out a couple thousand words. And then, you know, after every five or six, maybe seven or eight chapters, then I'll kind of go back and look at it, you know, step back from it, just kind of look at, do I like where it's going, and, you know, or do I want to go here, or do I want to add this? And so that's how I kind of work my way through the story for the first draft, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll probably do at least one full rewrite, maybe a second, And then, you know, I've gotten a really good editor who I've started working with, and her name is Christina Fry.
And right, you mentioned her.
What's that?
You mentioned her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's really great and terrific to work with. So, so I'll rewrite that thing a couple of times, and then each time I'm stripping things out and adding new things, you know, to polish the story. Right.
David, how do you know though when to stop? Because there are, you know, an artist sometimes is right. continually, you know, tweaking things here and there, and if you really are a perfectionist, you may never finish the book. So how do you know
exactly.
when it's time? How do you know when it's time to stop? That you've got what you should have.
When I sit back and I can read it and I'm comfortable. Yeah, I got to be comfortable with it. See, that's the other thing, you know, that I think helps me now at this stage of my career and my life is having been a reporter with my byline, my name on a story that's out in front of the public. That. You know, you got to be proud of that, and you got to stand behind that story. And that's what I want to do with my novels, you know, however many there are, whether it's just these two or whether it's 52.
Sure.
I want to be proud of every piece of work. So I got to be satisfied. I got to be happy with it. And I got to believe that most of the people I know who read my books are going to enjoy it, you know. And I want to make them, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it sounds cliche. I want to make him laugh. I want to make him cry. I want to make him think.
Here's a question,
you know,
for
which
you.
Which is a rare thing today.
Well, yeah, it
you
is.
Know, how many people actually take time to think, you know?
Here's a question that we ask every writer that comes on our show, because, of course, the name of the show is The Writer's Block.
Correct.
Have you ever had the writer's block?
Well, I call them stall.
Writer stalls.
Yeah, and no, where I'll slow down. Where I'll slow down, and I just don't feel it. I don't feel it coming, and I don't. I'm like, okay, you know, this might not be good territory, you know, and I feel like I'm starting to come up to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So what I always do is go write another part of the story. You know, especially if I'm after the first draft,
mm-hmm.
The first draft is when you hit the most stalls. But,
oh, yeah, it's when you hit wall after wall after wall.
Right. But then I'll go create a new character. See, I'll write something else to get around, to get over the stall or the block. You know, that's, and because, and that, again, this goes back to being a deadline reporter, writer. You know, you can't look at your managing editor in the newsroom is standing over your shoulder waiting for the story. You can't turn around and say, you know, I'm just not feeling it. I got writer's block. Well, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't fly.
You're going to get a boot up the ass or show them the door.
Well,
or they'll say, okay, go get your last check.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it interesting that your deadline was a friend reading three John Grisham books, and that was, you know, you got to have it done by the time he's done with his Grisham books.
Well, he's not a fast reader, I can tell you that.
Well, you can't read John Grisham fast anyway. So, no. Yeah.
One last question. How long did it take you to write the second book from the time that you decided to sit down and start putting it to paper till the time you were finished with what you were comfortable with?
2 years.
Okay. Do you write every day?
Yeah, 2 years. And I try to write every day. I try to write something every day. You know, right? And that's what we tell the kids, that we tell all the students that we work with and stuff. Try to read something and write something interesting every day. You know, I don't care if it's soup camp. You know, read something.
Right.
You know, try to make sense of things. And that if you do that, you're fueling the creative process. You're pushing the buttons. You're always thinking about, you know, what color is the sky? And is the grass really green or is it parched?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's true.
You really have to, if you're writing and you're thinking about things and reading, it makes the juices go and it helps the creative flow, I believe. So, and sometimes it's crap. Sometimes it isn't very good.
Doesn't have
and
to be.
And other times it'll give you inspiration for another story. And,
sure.
And so now, you know, I've done these two stories, and now I'm working on two more. One that continues in the series, and then another one that's outside the series.
Hmm.
So, because I want to kind of stretch out. I don't want to get, you know, locked into a
sure.
mixed deal, you know, I'll just run with that dog. As,
yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to get locked into sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to try some other things and do some other kinds of writing. And so I'm having a lot of fun.
Excellent.
I mean, I'm enjoying it. And people are enjoying the work. I mean, that's the feeling I'm getting. I really appreciate the kind words that you both, I believe, sincerely, you know, talked about the book. I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm hoping I'm spreading the joy of reading and writing.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, the truth is that on this show we're very honest, and if we didn't like your book, we wouldn't talk about it. We'd just have to talk about other stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true.
It is true. It is true. And you know, when we like a book, we like a book. And you know, what I've read of yours so far, I really liked. And then what Russ finished the book, and he's in love with it. So
yeah.
Hey, and the time we have left with you.
It.
Yes, he did.
I did.
Well, he does that.
As you said, I burned through the pages.
He did. In the time we have left, David, why don't you tell our audience, get your contact info, your email and website, Facebook,
you can find my books on Amazon.com.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble, if you want it, you can just go to Barnes & Noble. They'll order it for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're connected to Ingram. And you know, associated there. You can go to your library, go to your local library, and if they don't have it, and you're a taxpayer, ask them to get it for you. Okay? I mean, I've got no problem with that.
Okay.
And or you can go to my website, which is davevizard.com.
You want to spell Vizard?
V as in Victor, I, Z as in zebra, A R D. .com.
Perfect. Just like Lizard.
Yeah. Just like the little green creatures. That's right.
Well, Dave, it's been absolutely phenomenal having you on with us.
Well, thank you guys so much. Good questions. I enjoyed the chat.
Oh, we did too. And you know, it was great that you guys stay up late to listen to us Babylon. You know, we get people that call in from the East Coast and they're up, you know, 11:30, 12
right.
o'clock. And you know, you got lucky. You're 10, so. But we want to thank you again
It's 11. He's Michigan.
Well, now it is.
No.
Or close.
No, he's midnight. He's getting close to midnight.
Almost 12.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well,
that's right. That's right. You're 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you so much for staying up and listening to us babble. And we appreciate the talk, and we love talking to you. And if you want Dave's books, go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, go to his website. And you should be able to get them all there. And again, David, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, and I really enjoyed it.
Okay, good enough. Let's talk soon. Oh, and you do have a coffee mug coming that says the Writer's Block
awesome.
On it. So I'll
awesome.
Get that out Thanks to you in the next day or two.
Thanks again, David. Have a great night.
You too. Yeah.
Nice talking to you, Ross.
Okay, bye-bye, guys. And David Vizard. Nice guy.
I like him.
Yeah.
The book was, you know... You said something really interesting, though. You said, you know, if we didn't like the book, we'd talk about other things.
Exactly.
Which is really true.
It is.
This book, it was one of the more fun books that I read. And that was the one thing that I kept going back to mm-hmm. is that the characters all seemed real. And as they flowed through their life, you could just see it. It
yes.
wasn't like you didn't have to buy into what
yes.
was going on. It was already there. It was like, yes, this is real life.
You know, amazingly enough, today I was discussing with my warehouse manager this morning, and he was asking me about, you know, people getting shot and stuff. And I said, you know, in the West, people didn't get shot in the chest all the time or the head or the arms or the legs. People got shot everywhere.
Right.
And mostly by accident. And so I was, you know, at lunch I was thinking about, wow, what can I do here? So I have this one guy, he's a rancher, and this guy's been trying to take over his ranch. He's just this bad hoodlum.
Mm-hmm.
So he finally gets there, and he's going to take over this guy's ranch. The guy's name is Lewis Kennedy. And Lewis Kennedy runs him off because he's got this old Springfield trapdoor 4570 rifle, and he runs this guy off. The guy's name is Jesse Morgan.
Right.
As he's riding off, galloping back to the trail to get the hell out of there,
right,
Lewis fires one more round and hits him in the heel.
Oh, God.
And all he hears is screaming, and the guy grabs his heel and takes off. So now, now the guy's going to be pissed by the time he gets to the end of the book. Okay, we are done for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's been, and by the numbers that Sam has given me tonight, there are quite a few of you that are joining us weekly and on podcasts. We thank you so much. It's been great. Russ, it's always a pleasure having you in studio.
I thoroughly enjoyed every month.
And now you have your own intro.
I do, except now they get to fix it.
Well, yeah, but it'll be next month it'll be fixed.
And yes, but so at least I feel like a real part of the team.
So, no, you're no longer Bobby Jean Bell.
Oh, thank you.
Bobby Jean, I hope you have a great concert tonight, and we will see you next week. Thank you again for joining us on the Writer's Block, and we are out of here.